All right, so welcome. So tonight we're talking about something that's a little esoteric. I'm going to just turn off my video for a second. And you can see this picture, this image of this big circle. I'm up in the far right there. If you could just spotlight me, Cheryl, for a moment. Pin it. Yep, there it is. All right, so that picture, that image, is part of a 10 series of 10 pictures called the Oxfording Pictures. This image itself is called Enzo, and it's in some ways the symbolism of Zen. And it, you know, it's a very striking image because it has this strong circle and also the white backdrop, and they both kind of blend into each other. There's a sense of form and emptiness combined. Right. And this image really covers this sense of form and emptiness. So this is really a deep teaching, and I want to try to make it much more accessible for us through a little analogy. Okay, you can unspotlight me. There we go. So I want to use the analogy of echolocation. Okay, so you think of bats, dolphins. Other animals have that capacity to send out sound waves. It bounces off something and comes back. I remember as a kid being out in the woods and seeing bats about this time of night in twilight, hunting for bugs, and I would throw a rock up and they would like alter course because for a second they would think it was a bug that was worth eating. And I thought that was fun to be able to influence their echolocation. And echolocation, of course, is a lovely, very important adaptation to be able to hunt for them, these species to survive. And when you think about it, some things have a much bigger echo that comes back. Like a brick wall is going to have a much bigger echo. Or something like a leaf or a bush is going to have a much fainter echo, a softer echo. So what does that have to do with this picture? What does that have to do with our practice? So when we think about it, when we practice, actually just when we're being alive as human beings, we're constantly having this sense data coming toward us, right? It's things we see, we hear, smell, taste, and think. Also physical sensation, but also thought is considered another sense. And we take that sense data and we create a whole story around it. Maybe just a small story like, oh, there's a bus going by, okay? Or there's a plane going by. Other times there might be a much more elaborate story, elaboration or concept around it. So echolocation in this, the way that we use our senses, I think is a nice analogy. Because we see something, like we're using sound as the beginning of the meditation this evening. Some sounds really didn't have much trigger in us. Not much came back. So it's almost like we're projecting our memory, our thoughts, our concepts out in the world. And when that hits something or receives something, it bounces back. And from there, we create this whole story. But what's really important in this whole analogy is that we create the sense of me who's experiencing that, me who's having that sense, me who's hearing, me who's thinking, me who's sensing. Right? So this echolocation is very much intact there. And just like an echolocation, like even right now, as you're sitting, if things are pretty comfortable and benign, you know, you look out, there's not a lot of stuff coming back. But if I suddenly called out your name, you know, there'd be a bigger echo because you're like, oh, why is he calling out my name in the middle of this talk? Right? So some things have a bigger trigger, a bigger reaction in us. Dharma practice is about learning to unhook that mechanism of echolocation. That we see something and we create a story around it and we create the story of me in the midst of that. That's why I read that poem, that everything we see carries the burden of what we know until we let it be itself again. Right? Everything we see carries the burden of what we know until we let it be itself again. So that echolocation is like I see something, I see a fan and there's an idea. Okay, I know what that fan is. I know what it does. But that's a way, there's a utility of that, of course. I know a fan's helpful to cool me down. It's not so helpful for other things. But it also creates a certain placing it in my memory, placing it in my history, right? So that seems pretty benign. Now let's take it to something that's not so benign. Okay, let's take it to someone who we take as being other. Let's say I'm a white male and I have prejudice or racism that I haven't really seen or acknowledged. I see someone who I think I take that, paint that racism on. That's putting that person in that particular box, that particular prison, that particular, this is who I hold them to be. And of course, there's all the power of systemic racism behind that in the way our society does that reinforces that. So Dharma is about learning how to loosen that up, to see things as they actually are, to really let things be themselves again, to have a fresh, alive relationship to life. So in this picture, this image of the Enzo, of the circle, and the phrase in this image is forget both the self and ox. Okay, so that echolocation has fallen away. There's not the ox sense of the ox, and there's not the sense of me. Okay, so if you're just joining us, you're like, what is he talking about? What is this ox? All right, so let's take a quick journey back through these 10 pictures. This is what picture 8 and 9, 10, and see how this relates to this echolocation. Because this ties in nicely to what happens in this image. So the ox is a way of representing our true nature, our spiritual, and also our spiritual practice. So it's a really a beautiful, very sophisticated way of showing how our practice evolves and changes over time. Right? That's not just learning to be mindful and being okay with it. That's all that there is. It's not just about learning to have a sense of steadiness. It's not just about learning how to have less stress in our lives. Those are all very vital and very valuable. And from a Dharmic perspective, the path goes much deeper than that. So this is just a taste or a way of exploring that. Or if we have practiced for a while or have a deep practice, maybe it doesn't have to be necessarily for a long period, you can recognize how the practice starts to evolve and change. So the very first image in this series is this little person searching for an ox. Okay, so the ox is this externalized sense of the true nature, right? So we've set that echolocation. This thing I'm looking for is outside me. I'm looking for where it is. Is it there? Is it there? Is it there? Can't find it. But I sense there's some lack. There's some disconnection with my true nature. So then we start to see the next picture, actually start to see the traces of the ox, the footprints of the ox. So now there's a little bit of feedback coming back. Our echolocation is actually bouncing on something, and we're recognizing the expression of our true nature. And the next picture is we actually glimpse the ox. So there's even stronger echo coming back. Next picture after that, we're trying to catch the ox and eventually tame it. And it has a certain wildness to it as a way of escaping and disappearing. And then we search and find it again. And so this is part of our practice, that we learn how to steady our attention and how to calm our minds, how to have a sense of compassion to our experience, to learn to see through our resistance. So we're actually meeting life how it actually is instead of through our concepts. Right? So all of this starts to open to a deeper sense of what we truly are, our true nature, and the true nature of all other beings. There's a really one in the same. It's really one in the same journey. And for a lot of the journey, you know, perhaps for many people, that's as far as we go. There's always this sense of me who's doing that journey, me who's trying to find that ox, trying to relate to that true nature, trying to identify it, catch it, tame it. And we can sometimes get to this place of a great mastery around it, that I can practice and I can drop into that stillness, that level of concentration. So it seems like this is really arrived. This is the picture of taking the ox, riding the ox home, that finally you've caught it and tamed the ox. And now you're able to ride it. It's able to go where you want and you're really connected with it. Right? This feels like a sense of mastery in the technique. And this is true. It is absolutely a mastery. And yet this echolocation, there's still the sense of me who's riding the ox. There's a sense of me who's doing this practice. And this is what these pictures are such profound teachers, because the next image is this person is sitting just, in a sense of repose, and the ox is forgotten, but the self remains. So this is a quieting of that echolocation, that projection outward isn't hitting the ox, because we've realized that inner nature is actually within us. We're not trying to search for it. And so we're really abiding in that sense of coming home, being at home in ourselves. And there's still that little bit of that echolocation as I know that's happening. I'm experiencing that. There's a sense of peace. There's not a sense of needing to search or yearn. Right? So even a deepening of that. And then we move to this picture where we forget both the self and the ox. Both the self and the ox. And so all the way into this picture, the echolocation was always referencing something else in relationship to me. Okay? This is a very natural, common way. This is really the way we relate to the world. We know, what am I thinking about this? What am I feeling about it? What's my opinions about it? And in a person, a situation, an idea, it's always self-referenced. Right? So you can see how that really should feel very familiar, right? That's how we relate to life. We use that same mechanism as we practice, as we meditate. But if the meditation really starts to work, then we start, that echo starts to break down, that there's not that externalization, a sense of separation. And eventually that sense of us starts to fall away too. We reinforce ourselves. Now, before that gets too out there for you, notice how it happens in small ways, in simple ways. Perhaps you noticed in the meditation, when you're listening, opening to sound, if you really start to let go of your projections, your preconceptions, your ideas, your reactivity, you became less established in relationship to that sound. You became a little softer, a little more diffuse, a little less solid. Contrast that when a sound, let's say you're like, okay, sounds great. And then you have this annoying neighbor who's playing their music too loud, or clomping around upstairs, or your kids are making a big noise, or your cat wants to be fed, or something that is not what you were planning for the meditation. You know? So then you're much more established, aren't you? You're struggling with the sound. You're trying to get rid of it. You're irritated by it. One teacher asked, when people would complain about the sounds, says, are the sounds bothering you, or are you bothering the sounds? And I think that's so often we're the one who's bothering the sound. You know, for years I still teach this introduction to meditation. But when I would open to sound as an object of meditation, inevitably there would be some distracting noise in the building that I was teaching at. There'd be a conversation outside, or there was a band practicing in another room. And it was really interesting, the timing of that. And instead of getting up and trying to get things quiet, I would say, okay, let's practice with that. Let's practice with how our reaction arises. This is a really helpful thing to do. Because if we make our practice too simple and pure, too purified, like there's no distractions, it's a very fragile practice. But if you can practice in the midst of a city party, a festival, a bunch of noise, and still have connection to that unity of mind and that stability of mind and that connection, relationship to life, that's a stable practice. That's a durable practice that we can bring into many aspects of our lives. So that sound, back to that analogy, when there's not a lot of echo, we become much more quiet inside, right? So start to notice those thin waves. That was the homework from last week, is to notice how some stuff, just, you have a big echo location, You know where it is and you know where you are in relationship to it, right? Thought, idea, another person, another experience, your internal experience, chronic pain, all those things have a strong echolocation, life circumstances. And some of these are very, you know, not to minimize those, but just to notice the process. And the more that we establish our sense of self in relationship to that, the more suffering we'll have in relationship to it. Okay, the more, the stronger the echo comes back, the more potential suffering we have. The less echo we have, the less suffering we have. And paradoxically, the more responsiveness we have, the greater ability we have to flow and to blend with things, to not struggle and fight with things in the same way. So this echolocation, hopefully hopefully it's a helpful analogy. So I want to just run through the verse with this image to finish up this little talk. So this, I'm trying to make it accessible for anyone who might be brand new tonight. Again, holding the ox as our true nature, an intention of, okay, where is that? How can we find that? How can we connect with that? And how do we tame that? So the first line, two lines are whip, rope, person, and bull, all merged into no thing. Okay, whip, rope, person, and bull, all merged into no thing. So the whip and the rope represents our effort for training, our techniques, our methodology. And the person is the person who's meditating, the person who's experiencing it. And the bull or the ox represents that true nature, the thing we're trying to bring ourselves and it together. We're using those whips and ropes to do that. So all the intentionality, all the struggle, all the distancing, all that falls away, all merge into no thing, into a sense of emptiness, a sense of spaciousness. So this points to, let me go to that next in a second, actually that this point in a second here. So the next line is, this heaven is so vast, no message can stain it. Okay, so this is really talking about the experience. When you have this experience of non-self, without falling away of separation, there is a vastness to it. There's a sense of everything's merging together, a sense of interconnection. There's a lack of needing to do anything with. We're just at peace there. There's also a vastness of that experience. So this heaven is so vast and no message can stain it. Now, no message to sustain it. It's like any thought or any idea, it can't really, it can't capture it. It can't land. It can't, it doesn't have any place of footing. We kind of go into this place beyond thought. Like this poem from Rumi that I love to read. Out behind ideas of wrongdoing and right doing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. And when the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. Right? So this image and this verse and Rumi are talking about that same quality. Normally our world of ideas and even right and wrong, and all that seems is important, and certainly relatively, it is important to know what's ethical, what's kind, what's based in non-harm. And in the midst of this experience, there's a way that that falls away. Luckily, what also falls away is the impulse to cause harm. But when it, again, when we come into that vastness of it, there's ideas just can't rise. They just don't make sense. Even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. The next line is, how may a snowflake exist in a raging fire? So this is, again, the vastness, the kind of roar of this silence. But there's not this, a snowflake, let's say, is an idea that arises. And then we create this whole story around it. It's that echolocation that arises. And finally, here are the footsteps of the ancestors. Here are the footsteps of the ancestors. So this is the path of the Buddha, the enlightened ones. And you're seeing that, okay, this is the path that they trod. Now, this picture, there's a kind of an important piece of it that's a little more subtle, is that this picture sounds like, okay, we finally arrived, right? This is it. And sometimes we, in our practice, when we have that kind of realization, we say, okay, I don't have to do anything more. I'm going to just stay in this place. But that in itself has a subtle echo, the subtle sense of me experiencing it. It's so quiet. It's still really, we're tied to that. You can see this in terms of how you relate to the world, how you actually come into the world. It's like this state is much easier to attain when you don't have anybody around. You don't have anyone rubbing up against you. Life is easy and smooth. You're in a cave or on a retreat. So this is, what did someone say? When Narayan, who I taught with at Cloud Mountain, she was sharing a story from her husband who said that he was talking to his relatives and, you know, it was a really engaging and also a little, you know, irritating exchange. And afterwards he said, you know, the absolute I have no trouble with. It's the relatives I have trouble with. The relatives I have trouble with. Oh, this is the other one I heard. Ram Dass, I think, said, if you think you're enlightened, go spend time with your in-laws. Or go to spend time with your family. And this state, it's like, wow, I feel like I got here. But when we went up to people that are close to us and know our buttons, we see that, okay, the echolocation is right there, comes right back. Right? So it's a state. It's an experience. It's a seeing. It's also a state. It hasn't deeply, deeply transformed us. Okay, that's picture number 10. When the person becomes this Buddha, but goes back into the world without any sense of distance of self and other, but yet completely loving the relative reality, loving the details of life. This is the teaching of form and emptiness. The emptiness is form and form is emptiness. That in our practice, we often start off really obsessed with form, the details of life. So form includes all those different, all our thoughts, our memories, our ideas. That's really where life is. And we start to practice and we realize, wow, that's where all the suffering is. So I've got to get rid of form. I got to get into the formless, into emptiness. So form is bad, emptiness is good. And we practice for a while, sometimes a long while, and then we realize, okay, there's emptiness. There's a stillness. This is what this picture points to. It's like, okay, I've landed. Now stillness, emptiness is good, form is still bad. But there's that tension, there's that instability of it. And for our practice to really mature, we start to see that emptiness itself is in the midst of all forms. And actually all forms, you know, empty form itself, emptiness itself is also a form. And this is where things really start to come into balance. And so we start to get a hint of that. And that's why this last line, here are the footprints of the ancestors, it's indicating that you haven't quite arrived yet. This is where the Buddha has gone, but he kept going. It's not like otherwise be like, oh, there's the Buddha. You're there. Just hang out in this enlightened person's retirement home or whatever it might be. It's like there's still something else that needs to happen, something else to grow. And that's where we go into next month. All right, so echolocation, form and formless. Let's see how that lands with you. So in a few minutes, and we'll take a break for 5 minutes, and then we'll have some small group discussions where we can talk about that in a practical way in your practice. And just a quick word about Donna or donations. So Sims, we have a suggested donation of $5 for these events. But no one's refused admittance because of inability to pay. You know, if you're in a difficult financial state, just come, just practice. That's, you're perfectly welcome. If you have the means, please offer that to help support the organization so we can continue to offer the Dharma. And also for myself, I do receive a stipend from SIMS, cover a lot of my administrative work, but also I welcome your support. And so you can see there's a couple baskets here and also online that Dara just put up there. All right, so we'll come back at 5, let's go 11 after, and we'll go into those small groups. All right, thank you. All right, welcome back. So online, you can still hear me all right? Good. All right, so let me introduce the topic of what to explore. So it really evolves around this idea of echolocation. And it's a chance for you to talk and reflect on your own practice, your own lives. And if you reflect, I think you may notice that there's things in your life that used to be an issue, a sense of irritation, a sense of struggle, that somehow over some practice period, they suddenly stop being an issue, at least less of an issue, right? Maybe there's still a little bit, but it doesn't bother you in the same way. It could be something as simple as, a neighbor that always irritated you, you stop being quite so irritated. It could be that you find you're able to listen a little more carefully to someone who's maybe a little boring or a little uninteresting, whatever it might be, right? So some shift in how in your life and how you show up in the life that reflects in you being less opinionated, less reactive, less guarded, less defensive, something like that. And this is pointing to this process of echolocation starting to fall away. So talk about some of those situations. You could also talk about things you've noticed that, well, you know, things that really, you know, I think I'm practicing really well. And then that neighbor starts their leaf blower and I just lose it. You know, I just can't stand that sound. Okay. Talk about that in relationship to this process of echolocation, that you're hearing something that's unpleasant and you really take form in relationship to it. You get a sense of that? Also talk about how other things just don't have a lot of reaction to. You don't really get a lot of charge. There's not a lot of echolocation. You don't take form in the same strong way. Right? So I'm asking you to kind of explore that, talk about that, and see how that shows up in your own lives. And in these groups, just holding everything that's said in there confidentially. The purpose is to really share from your own experience and be heard in that. So instead of offering suggestions or ideas, just listening to each other deeply and seeing what arises. So we do these for 20 minutes, and we have groups of about 4 to 5 people. So those here in the room, if you could just go find some people, if you like to. If you like to pass, you can just sit by yourself. And doesn't have to be people you know. Sometimes it's fun to have people you don't know. And just explore this question. And online, we'll have you be put into some breakout rooms. So you can go ahead and join there in person. And here and online, in a moment, you should get those rooms. And if you're by yourself, we'll come in and move you around so you're not by yourself.
All right, question came that I missed before the breakouts. And the recording, it doesn't go into the breakout, so that's a private experience. And I wanted to share a couple of things just about this whole process of that echolocation. We kind of talked about it, and kind of retrospect, noticing things which have fallen away. And during practice, there's times that you take something as being really solid that suddenly you see as not being so solid. I mean, it's like that's a moment of insight. Something falls away. It could be in a deep meditation, it could be in the midst of a retreat. It could be in real, in just in daily life, that you suddenly have this waking insight that you realize that this echolocation is actually an optional thing. They don't have to keep projecting your ideas, your thoughts, your beliefs on something. And you also don't have to take form in the midst of it. Those moments are important to note and to pay attention to. Because it really, you see how the practice really comes forth. It's something that seems so solid and so unchanging. And suddenly you see, wow, this is actually very impermanent. This is actually empty. So I just want to add that to the discussion. So now we have a chance for any questions or share. I'm curious what you talked about, what you explored. Go back and forth between the people online and those here in person. Anyone would like to share or ask anything? Start us off. Nobody's making eye contact with me. All right, so Amit, yeah, go ahead. Can we give her permission to unmute?
You should be able to now.
Okay, you can do that.
Tim, I can't hear you as well as before. I don't know if it's your mic, but it's just a note. But I can still hear you, so it's not a huge deal. My question is, when I was thinking about echolocation and kind of experiencing things through our sense doors, and I am curious because I have always, one thing I mentioned in my group is that one benefit from my practice or from my just experience is that I've been more connected to my body a lot and through the senses. But it's really tricky for me because I've been trained to focus and concentrate with my mind. And now I'm trying to practice concentration through not only using my mind, but all of my senses. And I find that really difficult. I find it really difficult to, I'm so used to like when I'm doing work, you know, just being up here. And now I can definitely notice a rush of energy to my head, almost that it's too much though, after I've started practicing, and that I want to come back into my body. But doing that, I have a hard time being, I don't know if it's just an adjustment that I'm trying to make, but I have a hard time being as like mentally quick, I guess, or I don't know the way to put it, but as focused as I normally am. And it could be that, like I said, just trying to concentrate in a different way, but curious if you have any thoughts there.
Sure, yeah, that's a great question. Should be able to hear me now better? Yeah, so yeah, thank you for pointing that out. I unplugged the mic to put it over here and I forgot to plug it back in. So you can still hear me, but not well enough. So sorry about that. So yeah, that's a great question. And as you articulated that really well, that, you know, having trained yourself to really focus from a mental component, a cognitive component, and how when you can really kind of absorb yourself into whatever you're doing, it makes you successful at your work or whatever you apply that to. And then, okay, now we say, okay, open up to these other five senses and kind of start to balance out the attention. There is a transition period where you're not as effective as you were when you're just focused on the mental component there. And so part of it is kind of choosing, having the choice really about when you're going to just, okay, I'm going to really go into the mental component and I know I'm going to do that. And you might play with having just a little bit of awareness in your body at the same time. Because especially when I teach, I tend to focus a lot on being embodied because we are often so focused on our mental experience and a capacity, we lose that connection with our body. So learning how to re-embody ourselves to reclaim that is such an important part of things. And when we're doing something like, as I'm talking to you right now, I'm feeling my body as I'm sitting. I'm feeling, you know, the sense of movement. But more importantly, I'm also kind of monitoring. What I tend to do myself personally is notice that internal sense of tension, of contraction, of easing, kind of in as an emotional sense or emotional body, if you will. That way I can always tell when I'm saying something, is it lined up with what I feel is true in that moment? You know, versus when there's a dissonance, I know, okay, I need to say something different. Or it might be, maybe I'm just a little nervous about sharing something. But it just kind of, there's that constant feedback as I'm speaking, as I'm exploring. And so you might play with that. You know, I know in work, you may have a lot of pressure to get things done quickly and to use that skill that you got hired to do, to apply to. But ways that are maybe a little less pressure driven, just play with that a little bit. Because I think you might find is that you won't be quite as quick, but you might find that you're actually more accurate. There's a depth that's you kind of taking in by being embodied. Again, think of it just as like maybe 5 or 10% of connection with the body. And particularly just, you're not so much feeling like the breath, but just feeling, okay, is the body, does the heart feel relaxed? Does the heart feel aligned? Does the gut feel aligned? Or is the gut tensing up? You know, so that way you can start to, as you work, you can see, okay, you know, whatever type of work you do, when it's really, things are really working well, when they're really, you're really clear about what you're doing, there's a sense of ease in the body. You know, while it's not, it's like there's a dis-ease in there. And then you can start to use that, oh, maybe I should slow down a little bit. Maybe my mind's getting a little ahead of my, you know, my reasoning or my, what am I understanding? Maybe I need to step back, look at a different angle. So that can be a very practical way. Like often when I'm trying to solve problems like on the board or in my life, I like to just kind of wait till I feel that resonance. And when I don't feel that, I know it's probably good to wait a little bit. And at some point lines up, okay, then it feels more intact, more integritous, and it's often a much better decision to happen that comes from that, I should say. Does that help at all?
That helps greatly. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you for your question. All right. How about back here in line? Anyone like to, not online, in person? Like I lost where I was there for a second. That's funny. Anyone like to share anything back here in the room? Yes. Come on up if you don't mind so they can hear you online.
I'll try to speak for our group because we all got into a little bit of the same thing. And it was the realm of the political where what we bounce off and what bounces back to us so strongly, intensely defines mm-hmm. who we think we are. And trying to, the importance of trying to let to relax that, to be in the world with less anger.
Great, thank you. All right, could you hear her online okay? Yeah, I think it's interesting to notice those things that have a really strong echo back, right? We really get triggered, really get charged. We really know we're right and then we know they're wrong. We all have those areas, a sense of righteousness. And it, you know, it could be that we are more right or we are more accurate. And yet we can see from, you know, the nature of the question too, is again, there's that play between the relative reality and absolute reality. There's also the play between suffering and the freedom from that suffering. And sometimes it does seem very paradoxical, like which, you know, I can't do both. I can't be open to the absolute and still live in a relative world. You know, but we can. We can actually have that. And so what I like to play with is when I'm dialoguing with someone who has a very different political belief, political spectrum, is often when I'm I'm in a particular role with those people, that I don't have to really, you know, voice my opinion. They don't really care what my opinion is in those situations. And sometimes they do, but it's often interesting to ask questions, to kind of listen through that echo back, that reaction. You know, again, going back to the first question around, okay, I feel all that tension in my body. It's like, how can they believe that? I can't believe they could even conceive of that. You know, it's like, so listen to that, feel that, and say, well, tell me more about that. You know, tell me what that is like for you. Let me hear your experience. Because they're doing the same thing to you. They're like, how can you possibly have that belief? How can you possibly believe that? And so you can see how that, when we really entrench ourselves, we get this division that's breaking our country apart, breaking the world apart. And we have to somehow be able to find some ways to work together. You know, other than we can't just overpower each other. It won't work. It won't work in the long run. And learning to meet us as human beings. I remember a number of years ago, this was back in Bush Jr. era, and I was talking to two people back to back. One person was just, I think he was a liberal, and he was just saying, I'm just worried about if the other side gets in control, what's going to happen to our children? And I was shocked to hear the next person who was very conservative say the exact same phrase. It's like, wow. And I said, they both care about their children. They both care about what's best for their children. They just have completely different ideas what's best for them. And maybe that's that point of contact. So it's like we can be right. We can stay in our righteousness, or we can learn how to really dialogue with people. And that's the path to freedom. Because that's, we can actually hear each other's perspective. And we can see, okay, how can we navigate this? How can we find a way that we can work together? That's a really concrete way to practice. You know, if you're lucky enough to have, a lot of us do stay very isolated in our own, that's part of the problem, in our own belief structure. We are around people who believe the same thing as we do. And we don't rub up against that, and we avoid those conversations. But play with it. Have a sense of curiosity and really watch that echolocation and how it really triggers you. And see if you can learn to listen through that and still stay in connection. Okay? Same thing applies to a myriad of things. You know, physical pain, chronic pain, terminal illness, loss of our roles, of our identity. All these have these strong echolocations. So learning to kind of develop this way of relating to it and listening through that helps us navigate these very difficult things that happen in our lives. All right, so let's go back online and see if there's anyone who'd like to ask or share anything. All right, back here in person. Get hypersensitive to someone scratching their face. Is that a hand going up? Yes, Beth, come on down. Was it Bob Barker who had that? The Price is Right? Come on down to The Price is Right.
So I'm taking a risk here because I'm not sure that what I have to say is going to be relevant, it's going to match what, but I'll just say it. So, as you were talking about form, not form, I was realizing about my relationship with football. I grew up in a house where there were no sports. It was considered primitive and obscene, and instead there was opera. And so I had no formation around football. And then I married a sports fanatic. And I have had many different kinds of relationships with that media in my environment over the years. And I've noticed when I engage, or as Philip would say, take birth in the irritation, that the sound and what it means and the money that it's costing and all that, then irritation comes up and that creates form in my head, in my mind. But when under the best of circumstances, all it is just this droning sound in my mind. And over the years, I've found a way to just kind of put it in my, it's just sort of a background noise, just like the, and there's no irritation at all. And that's, that feels more diffuse. That feels more like just sound, rather than this entity that I cannot relate to. So
I'm curious why you thought that wasn't what we're talking about.
I guess I... I had hoped that it was correct, it was the right thing. But when you start talking, it sounds so smart, and there's so many levels to what you're saying. And I'm just thinking about football used to bother me, and now it doesn't bother me. So it used to be in form and it irritated me, and now it doesn't. So
could you hear her there online?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, they heard. Yeah.
Did they hear you? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Don't discount that. It's a very, very practical and immediate thing that helps you survive your marriage. and it's an important thing too, as you say, like, again, there's a very nice way of how you can go into the reactivity, the judgment, all that, which has its, accuracy or validity, from your perspective and probably many people's perspective, but not everyone's perspective. But yes, you see that. But you see how that creates a lot of suffering around it, especially since, your husband wants to keep watching football, right?
And
this is no comment against football if you're a football player or fanatic. That's we're talking more about just this personal relationship to it.
Yes.
You can plug whatever you want into this. It's, I always like to look at it as a, it's kind of almost like we have one way we suffer. We just have one core way we suffer. We just have a lot of ways we plug into it, and myriad expressions of this central way of suffering. So learning to release that reactivity, then you can just hear it as that drone. That's wonderful. It's really a change. That way you can still be present, but not be so caught up in it. So one thing I was wondering, if part of your hesitation was around, should you learn to love football? If you were really a good...
I got over that.
She got over that a long time ago.
But, as you're talking, I'm thinking, I can, at any given point, I can choose to take it on as form. I can create an opinion about it and get haughty about it. I'm better than football. All that stuff.
Right.
But when it drops, and that causes suffering for me, it starts, causes distance between my family members. It's not just my husband now, it's my kids. I mean, it's a whole thing. And I also, I see when it's just a drone for me, I can have distance to it, and I can see how much it makes them happy, how happy it makes them. Mm-hmm. And that's, that's awesome.
Yes.
Thank you,
Beth. It's a wonderful way of applying what we're talking about. And then one thing I wanted to just say is that it's sometimes as practitioners, we think we should be able to open to everything. I didn't hear that that's what you're trying to do. But it's okay to have discernment too. It's like, I don't care for this. I don't think it's good. And it's the situation of my life. So I can learn to work with it. We don't throw out our discernment. We don't throw out our preferences, and sometimes we become more sensitive as our hearts open too. So that's perfectly fine to learn to navigate and maybe navigate yourself away from things which are very difficult. All right. Anyone else before we have a few announcements? All right, let's do one more. So, Emery.
Hi. Yeah, this is just a very unrelated kind of general comment, but I just wanted to thank my small group members and the people who were, you know, offered their energy and vulnerability to the Sangha. I just learned so much by listening to your questions and your comments and your experiences and Tim's responses. And I'm so grateful. And I'm also, I just had so much gratitude for, you know, I'm online, obviously. And the sound is so good. And it's just like, I just know there's a lot of work and probably wires and outlets and things that go into making the experience for those of us who are online just so immediate. Like, I feel like I'm there with you a lot of the weeks, really every week. I just appreciate all the effort that goes into making this communication possible, from the very human, like, people sharing to, like, all the work that goes into creating the online thing. So thank you.
Great. Thank you, Emery. Yeah, people were doing the little hearts and people applauded. And just to show you, there's our setup, there's wires, there's Cheryl, who is the engineer of all of this. And there's a lot of work she's done to make this happen. So thank you for that feedback. And it's so easy to kind of forget about those people. And also the people, the Zoom volunteers and Ken, who helps set up these meetings. There's a lot of people that come together to make Sims work. And that's an expression of Sangha. And there's also the expression, as Emery said, about listening to each other. You know, here, as you're exploring the Dharma, exploring it in very concrete ways. It's a very powerful aspect of being in a community. So thank you for sharing that. All right, so Cubba, our board president, has a few announcements. And one thing, she's going to probably mention this, but with this Friday we have a guest teacher, Judith Rager, who's doing a talk on Untangling Karma, Intimate Zen Stories on Healing Trauma. Okay, so she'll be meeting here in person and also online. So I'm excited to hear what she has to say. She has a book on that topic that'll be available. So please consider attending. All right, so let's switch to Cubba.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Tim's beginning meditation class has started. And is there one more week that people could join?
Yes, it can come up to this Thursday.
Okay.
Either online or in person.
Either online or in person. All events I'm going to mention, and there are two others, are hybrid and in person. Actually, just one other, because Tim, you mentioned Untangling Karma with Judith Regnier. And then this is a little in the future, but November 4th and 5th, Dave Leggett is going to do insight dialogues. And it sounds really interesting, very similar to what we do here, but with a few more steps involved. And I'm personally intrigued.
Yeah, it's a powerful process.
Powerful. I look forward to experiencing it. Also, I want to echo what you were saying, Tim. One beautiful way to explore your practice is through volunteering. And so do not rule yourself out if you're online. Of course, you know, and there are many people here in this room that have volunteered. CubbaReese@seattleinsight.org. Email me if you'd like to volunteer. Or volunteer coordinator, I think, is also, it's a tab on the website, and I'll get that also. And we would love, love, love to have you join it. There's many, many, many ways of volunteering with us. So thank you.
Thank you, Cubba. All right, so thank you all for your engagement. You know, these discussion nights are really special because you just feel people coming alive in the Dharma and sharing, and interconnectedness really grows. So thank you all. So next week is next month, and we'll be exploring the next picture of these Oxfordings, and I'll be teaching most of that month. Tori's going to cover two nights for me, but I'll be here three of those nights. And we try to make it practical, make it accessible. So I look forward to seeing you next time, and have a wonderful evening. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. Thank you so much. Thank you, Tim, Cheryl.
Thank you, everybody.
Good night. Good night. Be well. Be well.
Thank you so much.
Good night.
Appreciate you, Tim.
Thank you.
Night, everybody.
Bye.
Yes.
Night.
Bye-bye.
All right. Good night, everyone.